Pull up a stool and join us. 585-866-4FAN. 866-4326. The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester.
If you're a fantasy football player, chances are Andy Behrens is a part of your weekend. Yahoo Fantasy joining us. After we've got week one in our rearview mirror and week two now underway with the Bills getting the win last night, Andy, the fantasy gods not really smiling on those who invested in the preseason in Miami. Unless you have Devon Achane last night, you didn't get a lot of output from Waddle, from Hill, and certainly now this Tua injury. They're a bigger injury than fantasy football, certainly. But what is next for Miami, knowing that the future of their franchise quarterback is in jeopardy?
Yeah, man. First of all, you just hope that that Tua comes away from this okay in time and makes whatever decision is best for him. This is a bad scene for Miami, because not only, like, even with Tua last night, that was an ugly game. Miami defensively didn't really show up. I mean, like, all due respect to the Bills, but the some of the James Cook plays were just simply not defensed. That was a little bit disappointing. If you're just a fan looking for a competitive game, you didn't get it. And if this is multiple weeks, if this is the rest of the season, whatever it is without Tua, there are no easy answers at quarterback. Sometimes we get a miraculous run from somebody like Josh Dobbs, but that's not like a reasonable expectation. There's not anybody they could go get, is a free agent or is available for a reason. So it's not great. I don't have like a pep talk for anyone who's got Tyreek Hill, for anyone with Waddle. Honestly, this isn't good for Achane. Like, we want to invest in running backs who are tied to teams that are going to score points and gain yards. You know, it's mostly the quarterback's job to keep a series alive and to keep, drives extended and all that. So this isn't good news for anyone tied to the offense. Again, I don't have a pep talk for anybody. I don't personally feel good about it. I had Tyreek Hill as my number one receiver. And these things happen, but that's, if we were to draft all over again today, I wouldn't have him in the first round.
Andy Behrens, Yahoo Fantasy, is our guest. Andy, I'd like to go back to the final game of week one. And this happened this week where, hey, it's Monday night, just finished up dinner. Let me look at... Oh my gosh, Christian McCaffrey's not in the lineup. What is going on? And luckily, had Derek Mason. I would imagine that's like a big five-alarm fire in your world. So I want to just kind of get your thoughts as to, do the 49ers owe anybody, should they be a little more transparent, especially in this day and age of legalized wagering? Because fantasy is one thing, but then when you're talking about player props and everything else, and, look, for us, it planned ahead. I mean, you had Derek Mason. Hey, it all worked out okay, but just wanted to get your thoughts on how that all went down on Monday night.
Yeah, I don't think that the team should be under some special obligation because sports betting is more widely acceptable. They just got caught kind of doing something that teams for decades have done, right? Being as secretive as they can. It's pretty unusual for a team to actually in-house not have an idea about whether one of their absolute, inner circle star players is going to be available on a Sunday or Monday when it's late in the week. They just don't tell us, and they haven't told us for years. And that's why we get that weird news dump from Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter on Sunday mornings, and all the information just comes out and they're willing to share it. I don't know what compromise was struck between the league and, sports bettors and whoever else to get that very well coordinated dispensing of information on Sunday mornings. But it's nice that it happens. They just got caught like in a fib. And hopefully if you had Christian McCaffrey, you already had Jordan Mason on the roster. He was by the end of the preseason, he was the very obvious backup there. And, I think everybody saw that he's not, Mason isn't the most inventive runner that you're going to find, But wow, does he ever deliver a punch when the run concludes, right? Like, he's a big guy. And he's also one of those just sort of perfect Kyle or Mike Shanahan running backs where they see the hole quickly, they hit it immediately, not a lot of hesitation, no dancing, you know, and then they just punish somebody at the end of a run. So really fun to watch him get that opportunity. You wonder, like, spinning it forward, once Christian McCaffrey's healthy, you know, I thought they gave him too many touches last year, and it's not, you know, they're the team that has the multi-year investment in him. I thought that was a huge workload for him, and I understand, you know, you just want to feed your best playmakers the ball as much as you can, but you also have this guy under contract for multiple years, and if I'm the Niners, the most important thing in my world is getting all of my playmakers to January and February at full health, or as close to full health as I can get there. So I can imagine a world where it's like a 60-40 McCaffrey Jordan Mason split. That wouldn't seem, you know, negligent to me.
Andy Behrens, Yahoo Fantasy Sports, our guest in the sports bar, as we kind of sift through and look at the what's left from week one and try to skate to where the puck is headed for week two. And one of the more fallout from week one, Jordan Love and his injury and the Green Bay offense, which, hey, if you were Josh Jacobs or Jaden Reed owner, I think you were kind of pleased with what you got out of week one. Malik Willis now behind center, or at least we believe Malik Willis will be behind center. What does that mean for Green Bay's offense moving forward? It's an offense that we low-key thought could be fantasy relevant this season.
Yeah, it means they got to get Jordan Love back as quickly as possible. I mean, if this Malik Willis, and I have all the respect in the world for LaFleur, and I think he puts together great game plans, and, you know, nobody identifies a weakness and picks at it quite as well as he does. Like, I think he's great. He is now doing it with a quarterback who's had multiple opportunities, and we're still waiting for his first 100-yard passing game. So, like, it just hasn't clicked for Malik Willis yet. Maybe that's all happened behind the scenes at Packers camp, and this is going to be a better version of him than we've seen. But I don't think, you know, especially in a non-bye week like this, I don't think you can start Jaden Reed. I don't think you can start Christian Watson. I don't think you can start any of these receivers, even though they're really exciting players and they were coming off good weeks. I don't think you can touch them. I would play Josh Jacobs only because I think they're going to lean on him as hard as they possibly can. But I have very low expectations for the Packers passing game. I would love to be surprised, because I still have a couple leagues where I'm going to have to start Christian Watson in all likelihood, but I'd rather not.
Andy, here in our show, we hang our head in shame. The one thing we take great pride in, our Survivor pick, and the horror of seeing that go up in flames week one. Should have known. Now you look back in retrospect, boy, there's a lot not to like about Cincinnati's offense, and there it was on full display. So here are the Bengals going into Kansas City, and I'm sure CBS thought when they scheduled this, or the NFL first CBS thought, yeah, boy, this will be really interesting. What's your advice when it comes to playing Bengals players this week?
Yeah, there's so much to talk about here, and I think we have to start with the, you know, if you're very online like I am, then you've spent days watching the video that somebody took off their TV of Joe Burrow flexing his wrist and, yeah, picking up a water bottle in a stylish but awkward way, you know, like as if that's an indication that his wrist is problematic. I'll just tell you that I've seen a lot of camp footage of him. I've seen midweek practice footage. I watched that game. I think he's doing just fine. Like, I don't think there's anything to worry about with Joe Burrow. Like, he looks like normal Joe Burrow to me. He started really slow with an injury last year. I thought he looked fine. I think Joe Burrow's problem right now is Mike Gesicki and Tanner Hudson and Andre Yosavash and, like, the rogues gallery that he's throwing to. I mean, he got, you know, there was a bobbled touchdown, should have been a touchdown for Gesicki. Hudson screwed up. Like, guys are just screwing up. And they probably didn't get the ball to Ja'Marr Chase enough, but Ja'Marr Chase just showed up for the, you know, for the team's purposes. So I think we can let week one go. I thought Burrow looked fine. But, I mean, we're probably not going to get T. Higgins this week either. And without T. Higgins and Chase, it's really worrisome. I just don't think they have the arsenal to keep pace with the Chiefs. We'll see. I mean, obviously, Burrow's had nothing but success against that team. That might end here. I mean, I just, you know, the Chiefs are already humming. So I doubt that they can keep pace. But I would feel pretty confident starting Burrow and Chase this week.
Andy, what's your game plan if you're a Puka Nacua owner and you're looking to fill that void now, knowing that he's not going to play this weekend?
Yeah, this is one of those things where there's been a ton of talk in fantasy circles about like which Rams receiver is going to benefit, and you know, so I'm sure somebody's going to, and the candidates are DeMarcus Robinson and Tyler Johnson, who was a great player at University of Minnesota years ago, and kind of stepped into a beefier role with Nacua gone in week one. And the Colby Parkinson, the tight end, might get a few extra looks. But I think the real answer is that Cooper Kupp is just going to be the overall wide receiver one for a while until Puka gets back. Because Cooper Kupp had 21 targets in that game, and that was by far the most in the week. I don't think anybody else had more than 14. I think you're going to get, maybe it's not the 2021 Cooper Kupp, but you're going to get that kind of volume. I think you're going to get something very much like the 2022 Cooper Kupp. I just think he's going to be peppered with targets all the time. And that's the right answer. Like if you happen to draft him, wow, did you luck into a great situation? Yeah, it's not all luck. He's a great player, but you stumbled into a great situation that is now even better with Puka Nacua absent.
Andy, one game I'm just licking my chops here, and that's Detroit at home against Tampa Bay. And Tampa Bay's secondary, Hall out with the injury, also out for a couple weeks, Antoine Winfield Jr. The Bucs come in a little banged up. So my question is, how far down the line are you inserting Lions players here? What's the cutoff here in Detroit as Detroit a 7.5-point home favorite in this game?
Oh, listen, I think after opening week, we need to consider Jameson Williams like an every week starter. And you know, do we want to call him a wide receiver three for now with wide receiver two upside? Sure, that's fine. But he saw 9 targets. And if you go back over, I think it's his last 4 games, regular season games, I think he's seen 25 targets. So like, this guy's getting volume and they're using him downfield. They're scheming up touches for him. That is the other nice thing about Jameson Williams is he operates at a level of the field that doesn't really interfere with what Amon-Ra St. Brown does, what Sam Laporta does. So it doesn't have to be a zero sum situation. He doesn't have to take away from anybody else. They might just be that much better, with a sort of fully functional Jameson Williams, on the field. So I'm really excited about that team. And these guys start themselves, you know, they're all too good to sit. Gibbs and Montgomery and Amon-Ra and Laporta and Williams. We're starting them all. You're starting Goff, in leagues in which you have him. He's kind of the dream scenario. If you lost Jordan Love, to be able to plug in, a Jared Goff, I think he's in a great situation. I'm so looking forward to that game too. Like week one was so, like passing volume was so low. Offense was so meh. And these are two teams that when they met in the playoffs really gave us a fun game. And Baker went over 300 yards. And I just think it's going to be fun. I'm trying to focus in on the games that are actually going to provide yards and points in week 2, because I'm not sure that's going to be the norm for a while.
Well, Andy, I don't know if this is a game that's going to provide yards and points, but it's one we have circled as a potential upset just based on what we know from these two teams in their week 1 performance, with the Jets going to Tennessee, knowing that Tennessee basically gifted the Bears a win in week 1, and man, there's a lot of pressure on Robert Saleh to get a win and not start this season 0-2 with Aaron Rodgers behind center. My question's about another receiver who had 9 targets in week 1 and turned 2 of those targets into touchdowns. How real is Alan Lazard's production? Do you expect that to be sustainable here through the course of this season? He's somebody worth picking up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's good. Now, can Alan Lazard outproduce Mike Williams? I think so. I think Garrett Wilson is just too good to not command 160, 165 targets, something like that on the season. So ultimately he's going to take up most of the oxygen. I mean, we know that Rodgers has a pre-existing relationship with Alan Lazard. We know that, you know, he's a huge target too. So I think that is probably going to be the best game that we see from Alan Lazard for the remainder of the season. And he's probably not going to be the Jets receiver that you necessarily want to start each week. But can he render Mike Williams completely irrelevant this year? Yeah, I think that is totally in play. I'll just say on the Tennessee side, like, you can argue that Tennessee should have won that Bears game. But, man, I think Tennessee would have won that Bears game if they'd had Caleb Williams at quarterback. And it's not like Caleb distinguished himself. Will Levis was terrible. And made atrocious decisions. The interception for the pick six is I don't know. It's one of the three worst passes I've ever seen in my life watching football. It is a crazy decision. And then he was super reckless as a runner too. Like in fantasy, you like to see that, I guess, but he just put his head down all the time, never slid. What a miserable game from Levis. And I would feel, if I'm a Titans fan, I'd probably already be thinking, oh man, my team is still searching for its next quarterback because this guy ain't it.
Andy, last one for me, and it's about a team that, oh my gosh, if I still had hair, I'd be pulling my hair out. The Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons lose a game to a Steeler team. The Steelers didn't score a touchdown in this one. I thought things were going to be different with Kirk Cousins and the new offensive coordinator and new this, new that. And, well, I mean, what would be your advice here when it comes to the Atlanta Falcon offense as they go to Philadelphia on Monday night?
I'll just say that it's never as bad as you think it is. Like that is one thing that fantasy has taught me and the NFL has taught me over the years. Like we train ourselves to overreact to things, and it can't stay that bad. It was such a weird game too, because they actually they had a nice drive that ended in the Kyle Pitts touchdown to end the first half. And then their opening drive in the second half was great. They were moving, and Bijan Robinson looked unstoppable. And everything was clicking, and they're deep in Steelers territory. And then they had that snap that hit the guy who was in motion, and the ball's on the ground, and TJ Watt falls on it. And I don't think they got another 20 yards of offense the rest of the game. Like, it flipped the whole game. Kirk Cousins was obviously not functioning like the normal Kirk Cousins. We didn't see him under center. And that is presumably because he was not yet ready to, you know, take a 7-step drop, plant the foot and drive the ball, which is really alarming. We've seen a bunch of footage of him doing that in practice this week. So hopefully he can get there soon, but it did seem like they were game planning around their quarterback's limitations, which is always terrifying. So if you have, you know, you've got Kyle Pitts, you've got Drake London, I think you probably still have to play them. It is a great matchup. The Eagles were just a gift last year, and the Packers moved the ball on them in week one in weird conditions, in a weird field, on a weird stadium, all that. So I think I would still want to start Drake London and Kyle Pitts, but if you have great options, I wouldn't blame anybody who wanted to sit Drake London off week one until we really see it from Kirk.
Andy, tell us about your weekend. We're going to make you a part of our fantasy journey this season on Sunday, specifically Fantasy Football Live. What can we check out?
Oh, yeah, I'm begging people to join us an hour before kickoff on Sunday mornings, Fantasy Football Live. We go for an hour. We answer a bunch of questions. We talk about every late-breaking situation. The show is like half scripted, and it's just half what's going on Sunday morning. So we'll give you the latest information we possibly can. It's good fun, too.
Yeah, and you know, we certainly love when you put the wig on there and everything, Andy. So
that'd be fun. Appreciate that.
Andy, always great catching up with you. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, guys.
I'm really struggling with a couple of roster moves here. I mean, like, I drafted T. Higgins under the assumption that this dude was going to get out in the field and ball out this year playing under the franchise tag so they can make the big paycheck in free agency. He can't get on the field. And you want to question it or not, like, oh, now I'm thin at wide receiver. Yeah, and nobody cares about my team. But, I mean, like, there's a lot of dilemmas at wide receiver. Your Puka owner, you're trying to figure out what that looks like.
Well, you, there are healthy wide receivers in Green Bay, and to hear that stat, I was not aware of that. Well, Malik Willis hasn't gone for 100 yards. 100 yards rushing, that's not... No, he's never thrown for 100 yards in an NFL game. Oh.
He hasn't been good with his opportunities in Tennessee. And I think also if you're invested in anything in Tennessee's offense, knowing what we know about Will Levis and how he performed week one, I mean, Calvin Ridley, we hardly knew ye.
I didn't bring this up on the air, but I did say it to Andy off the air when I got him on the line. It's a travesty what the Chicago Bears are going to be wearing Sunday night.
Oh, the orange. Think. Yeah. I don't like it. Dude, I'm with you. I can't. I have no defense. I hate the Bears alternates. I hate the orange helmet on orange jersey. I think it's disgusting. You're proud, historic franchise. You're one of the original franchises. You don't have to go to that. What are we doing? And by the way, Houston isn't innocent here either. When did Houston become the Falcons with their getups? Those uniforms
are a ripoff.
They're the Falcons.
They're a ripoff.
They look like the Atlanta Falcons. They will look like the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday night in prime time against the Bears.
If I'm the Falcons, I'm suing the Texans.
suing the Texans. I'm going to sue DeMeco Ryans. I'm going to sue Cal McNair. I'm going to sue Deshaun Watson. I'm just going to join the club. He was mean to me. He asked me for a massage. I wouldn't give it to him, and he was rude, and he said awful, awful things. So I'm suing Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans, and I don't like their uniforms. I think they stink.
Hey, the only thing we're missing on a Victory Friday, are we going to play the Italian music in honor of the Bills winning?
Oh, right.
Yeah, that was going to be our thing on a Victory Monday, but today ain't a Monday. It's a Victory Friday.
Who's our guy? Hang on. I know
it was Bruno.
Yeah. This guy, Bruno Martino. Of course we're going to celebrate Victory Friday with Bruno Martino, Gene, because he's Italian. This hits differently today, doesn't it?
Yeah, in the weekend.
Yeah.
2-0 Buffalo Bills.
Italian Carousel on at its regular time Sunday morning with Joe Capogreco on the Fan.
Roma non fa la stupida stasera.
Yeah.
Dammi una mano a fare di te sì.
They kicked the Dolphins' ass. I mean, that was just a straight-up ass-whooping. The Dolphins were completely demoralized at the end of that game. It was so much fun.
Where it was so wrong, I thought, hey, for the whole offseason, you are focused on winning a playoff game to the point where your team meetings start at 25 past the hour to remind your team it's been 25 seasons.
I've got some more thoughts on Mike McDaniel. And there's a Bills player from last night. I don't know if you caught this. He may be starting a new trend. At minimum, this is a power move, and I can't get enough of it.
I have thoughts on last night's broadcast.
Ooh, I have some thoughts on that, too.
Yeah. Yeah, what we saw on Amazon and... Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah,
no,
we,
no,
can,
no.
We can chop it up a little bit about last night's game some more here up next, and we'll have Ryan Talbot to talk more Bills at 425 from NewYorkUpstate.com and a full recap, his thoughts from the Bills getting the Week 2 win in Miami to move in to 2-0. That's coming up here in the next 60 minutes. You can pull up a stool and join us at 866-4FAN, 585-866-4326.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.